Enemies of the People, December 2022, Chapter 5, Exploiting Humanity, Destroying Nature. It goes without saying that the Rothschilds' profiteering exploits have not been without adverse consequences for the well-being both of human beings and of the natural world to which we belong. For those who share their love of industrialism, such consequences might be regarded as mere collateral damage in the holy quest for economic growth. Growth, in the Rothschilds' case, of their own family fortune. Maybe they can contemplate a wrecked and diseased miner or factory worker, or a chemically contaminated stream or river, and insist in all honesty that this was a necessary price to pay for the onward march of development. But there have always been those of us who object on moral grounds to the relentless steamroller of capital that flattens and destroys everything we love about life and our world. The Rothschilds' role in the building of railways and the associated industrial system exposed them to, quote, unprecedented public criticism in the late 19th century, records Ferguson, quote, radical and for the first time socialist writers began to portray them in a new and lurid light as exploiters of the people, pursuing capital gains and profits at the expense of taxpayers and ordinary travellers, end quote. Capitalists like the Rothschilds have always regarded the mass of people, you, me and everyone we know, as mere objects, counters in their great game. The term human capital is still being bandied about by the family today. Accordingly, they never hesitate in uprooting vast numbers of us from our homelands and dumping us in some other part of the world. Not only does this often supply a source of cheap labour, but it also results in populations without any sense of shared belonging or community, which are thus less likely to come together to resist the control and exploitation of the ruling class. A very clear example of the Rothschild network's involvement in such practices is provided by Dockerty and McGregor in their account of their South African gold mining activities at the start of the 20th century. Rothschild associate Alfred Milner and the mine owners had a recruitment problem, with even their traditionally exploited African workers deserting them because the work was so badly paid and dangerous. But, quote, note the authors, quote, investor profits were good, end quote. So rather than increasing pay or improving conditions, they turned to China, where their exploitative regard had identified a large source of surplus cheap labour. Quote, the Chinese were lured to the South African mines with false promises and outrageous lies. They were led to understand that they would be living in pleasant garden cities, where, once settled, families might join them. Fit and healthy applicants were selected and kept in sheds until embarkation. Then, under armed guard, they were loaded into the holds of ships for the journey. The first ship to sail, the 3,400-ton iron-hulled SS Iqbal, left China on the 30th of June 1904 with over 2,000 men crammed in the hold, like a classic 18th-century slave ship. By the time it arrived in Durban, 51 men had died and their bodies dispatched overboard. The deaths proved no great loss to the organisers, however, for they had insured each man for $125 and netted a tidy profit from the insurance company. End quote. Once in South Africa, the men were housed in compounds beside the mines, 20 of them crammed into each hut. They were unable to leave the compounds without a special permit and were flogged and fined for not working hard enough or for breaking the rules. They worked for minimal wages and were forced to pay back the cost of their transportation from China. Comments historian John Hamill, quote, these Chinese were brought over in the prime of life to be broken on the wheel within 3 years for the purpose of grinding out ever greater profits for the monsters of greed who owned them. End quote. Monsters of greed indeed, and there are echoes here of the prison labour that the French Rothschilds had used for their nickel mines in the Pacific colony of New Caledonia in the late 1800s. Gold mining, like all extractivism, is very noxious to the natural environment, particularly because cyanide or mercury is used to separate the precious metal from the original ore. These substances are highly toxic to wildlife and, of course, to people, and particularly to people who spend their working lives exposed to them. As part of their monopolising of the industrial infrastructure, the Rothschilds took control of the mercury supply they needed for their gold business and secured a long-term concession from the Spanish government for the mines at Almaden. Writes Bouvier, Almaden was a hellhole, A report in 1900 stressed that the mercury fumes reduced the worker to a physically pathetic condition. End quote. For the record, the symptoms of mercury poisoning include muscle weakness, poor coordination, numbness in the hands and feet, skin rashes, anxiety, memory problems, and trouble speaking, hearing, and seeing. It was not just gold, mercury, oil, nickel, and copper from which the Rothschilds made spectacular profits. In building what Ferguson says, quote, can justifiably be described as a mining empire, end quote, they were also involved in the extraction and processing of lead, silver, diamonds, rubies, zinc, iron and coal. In Chile, their involvement in government finance was linked closely with the export of nitrates for use in fertilizers and explosives. After the First World War, their influence as the principal shareholders in Rio Tinto became even greater as the firm expanded its interest to embrace sulfur recovery, cinder treatment and silica gel, and gained a presence everywhere from Spain and Belgium to Africa and the Americas. Adds Ferguson, quote, by 1928 it was operating in 22 different countries with a host of different interests in metallurgy and chemicals, end quote. The family's exploitation of natural and human resources has accelerated since the Second World War. In the late 1950s, the French branch of the Rothschilds played a central role in the creation of a company called Cofimal, which targeted African natural resources like iron, aluminium, phosphates and uranium. In the late 1960s, their Le Nickel business, writes Ferguson, quote, absorbed Peñarroya and various other mining companies, end quote. The Rothschilds financed a 1950 scheme to develop the resource-rich Canadian province of Newfoundland via the BRINCO, British Newfoundland Corporation Limited Consortium, and occupy a preeminent position in the Australian natural resources market. In 1966, they led a large syndicate, raising the first tranche of funding for a transalpine pipeline between Trieste and Ingolstadt, and they were involved in financing Chile's first atomic reactor. Why spoil the story of their sparkling financial success with gripes about devastated lives and desecrated landscapes?